The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your preview for the match five, along with our little bit of breaking news and a mailbag segment to boot. We've got a lot to cover. Joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, welcome. Nice haircut.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it was time. I decided to take it all the way down to the wood. So here we are, and this should be a good show. I think there's a lot going on in the world of golf, and what seems to be the off season. Now this is like the official off season of the PGA Tour. And we got some breaking news and some golf to talk about. So it's exciting.
This is a show that is going to lead into a lot more discussions, I imagine. We'll nip the tip of the iceberg here in this one. Kyle Porter is here. KP, welcome. Happy post RSM Classic Monday.
I've got a lot going on right now, trying to cover a bunch of different stuff. I'm trying to read between the lines of this memo that got leaked. I wrote a Tiger essay today. I've got just juggling plates on Thanksgiving week. We should be in hibernation right now, and we're not. We're grinding over the off season. I haven't even thought about Brooks and Brooksy yet.
Oh, we'll get to that. Yeah, little bit of breaking news. I imagine this is going to lead into a much larger off-season conversation where we just go nuts on this. But here's what came out of the PGA Tour today. And Greg, business is booming because a memo was sent to the PGA Tour players that outlines and forecasts the operating expenses, the projections of revenue. But the big highlights are more money going back to the players. Let me read through just a couple of these. There's a lot. So the PIP, the world famous PIP, goes from $40 million to $50 million. The Comcast
Didn't Tiger just win that?
Well, yeah, that's a Tiger.
They just keep finding $10 million to add to it. It's crazy.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's all right. 40 to 50. Comcast Business Tour top 10. They were paying $10 million? No, not anymore. Now $20 million. The FedEx Cup bonus pool goes from $60 million to $75 million, which means if you win the FedEx Cup, Greg, instead of getting that cool $15 million like Patrick Cantlay did last year, you're going to get $18 million this time around. That's just part of it. Let's stop there.
They couldn't just make it a round number at 20. No, I'm only teasing. Look, this FedEx Cup bonus pool, what, 3 years ago was $30 million. It's now up to 75. And I think of something Justin Thomas said a couple weeks back. He said when he first came out on tour, he was a little nervous to talk to the guys like Jay Monahan and express their needs and wants. And then eventually he realized that they kind of work for him. And that means that the PGA Tour and those who represent the PGA Tour, they represent the players. And their job is to help the players in the best way possible. And they continue to do a great job in doing that and finding new revenue streams, an extra 10 here, an extra 10 there, 10M that is, for the players. So look, this is their job. It's a sign that the business is going in the right direction. And I think it means that they're doing a nice job. I don't know where it's all coming from. It's a significant increase, but players are definitely are happy about it.
So Greg just said the part that I talked about, or I've been talking about, is where is this all coming from? And it seems like... there's so many moving parts. I always have I have a hard time simplifying it down to to where I can understand it. But it seems like they're creating a model that is, I fear that it's unsustainable in a post Tiger world. We've not officially entered a post Tiger world, but he just buoyed the tour and everybody in its orbit for so long. And now it's like, hey, we're still on a rocket ship, but we're losing half our fuel, right? With Tiger being gone. And I just wonder if in the short term, all this that was laid out in this memo that Noah and Up leaked on Monday, whatever day it is, I have no idea what day it is in the short term, it's great. It looks great. Great for the players. Everything's good. But in the long term, and this is the fear that I brought up a couple weeks ago, are you creating a model where your distribution partners, so television partners, including CBS Sports, Golf Channel, NBC, all these different places, they have to pay such exorbitant amounts of money for that they can't create a quality product to show fans. And then if that happens, and then it starts your audience starts dwindling, then it just becomes a product that nobody's going to want to distribute, because it's not it creates an unsustainable model for the entities like CBS Sports and like NBC that actually distribute it. Does that land? Does that resonate?
Yes, and I worry about this too, and I also worry about the way that corporate America tends to work, which is, okay, the Torque forecast $1.5 billion next year in revenue. If they hit that, and then like they're just expected to grow every single year. And when you are expected to grow every single year, you've got to do things to like corporate America in general is not a very lean type of industry, right? It's this pressure to continue to grow. But Greg, I think Kyle is certainly voicing my concerns, but I think what the tour has in its favor is there are still, believe it or not, a lot of untapped revenue sources, which is shocking because there's an official PDF opener software. There's the official athletic band of the PGA Tour. There's the official literally everything. But to me, there's still very much an untapped market in generally younger demographics, the gaming / fantasy side of it, which can produce a lot of money. Like, I still believe there are a lot of untapped markets that are non-traditional from what the tour's been doing for the last 30 or 40 years.
Perhaps some of them are newly tapped. I mean, we have a show on Tuesday. We do every Tuesday that's a preview from a gambling perspective.
It's on Monday, but that's okay.
Well, we do the fantasy one.
Right?
But on Tuesday with our super preview, that's on betting. And I wonder if it's coincidental that when sports gambling becomes legal, all of a sudden the tour has found $10 million to go to every revenue stream that it has. Maybe that's a part of it. And I'm sure there's other things. I know that they signed a deal with Golf TV for $2 billion for international rights. So what's going on in global markets? And then you have a COVID boom. So I wonder, are they making these deals because of projections? That's one option. And I can understand your concerns from that perspective. From the other perspective, it's we've brought in a lot more than we expected. So now how are we going to give this out? And that's their plan. And if that's the way you do things, then that's not concerning at all. That's a great sign for me. Now, so this is the difference between, okay, I want to buy a car and it's a $30,000 car. I have an extra $30,000. Now I'll buy the car. That's very different than I'm going to buy that $30,000 car because I'm going to make $30,000 more this year. Those are two very different things. And if you're paying players with cash that you've just made, that's not risky at all. You're distributing money that you have. If you're doing it on credit, now I understand your risk. And I don't think they have any need to do that. So I don't know. I think it's a sign of growth more than anything.
There's a line in here that says, in addition, the 2022 forecast includes a withdrawal of $32 million from our reserves, to further fund player earnings. So that would tell me that I'm not 100% on that. The way that I read that is, hey, we had to pull some out of our rainy day fund to actually make this whole. Right? Is that how you read it?
Yeah. Which is it's an interesting question. But what do you, is that what the reserve's for? When you put things into the reserve, we're pulling $30 million out of the reserve. Well, what's in there? You're a tour that's for the players, right?
It's a great question. Yeah.
I understand having a reserve in case you need something, but the idea is that what you bring in gets distributed back to the players who earned it. And so I wonder if that was something that's planned, because I don't think they'd announce this if that were an emergency situation.
Right. And that's totally fair. And that's the part that it's just out here. And I don't know the details of how that works. I just think, what have we learned about television products over the last, 5 or 10 years? Our audience is getting more fractured or less fractured. They're getting more fractured, right? People are watching maybe still as much stuff, but it's spread out more. It's in different places. And so when CBS Sports and Golf Channel and NBC pay $800 million for golf in a what's the number, Rick? 750, 700, whatever it is, golf in a year, and they turn around to Lexus and Apple and Nike and say, hey, our audience got smaller than last year, but we actually need you to pay more. That's a problem. Right. And so the only answer is, well, we have to actually have more inventory of advertising and commercials to make up the fact that our audience is dwindling. Now, I need to look at numbers to see. I'm applying a broad theory to like golf specifically. I know numbers are not like increasing significantly, but I also don't know that they're decreasing significantly. So that might be a little bit unfair. I'm just speaking broadly about sports viewership in general. And so when that happens and you got all of a sudden you have to sell, instead of two ads to two companies, you got to sell 10 ads to 10 companies and reduce the amount of time that your product is shown on TV or distributed online, it's going to turn people off. I mean, I think in some ways it, you know, I don't know that we're totally there yet, but that's a trajectory that you don't want if you're the PGA Tour.
Yeah, the product certainly king here. Maybe by the time, you know, next couple of years, we'll be the official podcast of the PGA Tour. Who knows? We'll have to pony up some cash and see how that goes. But just to put a bow on this, because we're gonna have to talk a lot about this. This will be an off-season content thing where it's like let's just go through this one by one. But average purse going up from $8 million to $9.1 million. The player hosted events, so that's Genesis, API, Memorial are going, the purses are going up to $12 million from $9.3 million. The WGC, which is the only one on the schedule for this year, is the match play. That's up to $12 million from $10.5 million. And the Players Championship, which was already announced, that is a $20 million purse up from $15 million. So lots of big bucks, lots of discussion still to come. But believe it or not, gentlemen, we have golf this week. Don't let anybody tell you different. There is golf happening this week. Not only in Europe, but here in the United States, because we've got the match 5-5-5-5-5. Let's play this game. Name the first four versions of the match. And who won?
I got this.
Okay, then you go second. Greg, first match was who?
Tiger Phil.
Where'd they play it?
Shadow Creek.
And who won it?
Phil won.
Okay. Greg is absolutely correct. That was the match one. The match two, KP.
I thought I had this.
This is so tough.
Well, does this include the DJ Matthew Wolf thing? No it doesn't. That was separate.
TaylorMade driving relief. That's a different entity.
Okay, so it's Tiger Peyton versus Phil and Tom Brady.
Correct. Where'd they play it?
Did they? I think they played it at Concession.
No, Greg is certainly.
Greg knows.
They played at Medalist.
They played at Medalist.
That's right.
And who won it?
Tiger and Peyton won.
Correct. So that was the one. That was the peak COVID one. That was May 2020 when nothing else was happening. They played that at
that NatWest. That was when Peyton basically beat Phil, and then Phil won the PGA a year later.
Correct. All right, Greg. This is where it starts to get hard. The match three.
This was Phil and Charles Barkley, and Steph Curry and Peyton Manning.
Yes.
Now, where was this?
I would not.
This was in this was in Arizona.
I thought it was in like Utah.
Hold your pants on.
No,
Kyle.
It was at Arizona.
Hold my pants.
I believe.
Do your kids say that? Do they say that? Like, hold your pants on.
I think it's keep your shorts on.
Keep your shorts on. All right. Either way.
Okay. I know it was in Arizona. And I believe it was at a Phil Mickelson property. Although that might be the one in Montana. But no, I think it was a Phil Mickelson property. I just can't think of the name. I can't think of the name.
Called Stone Canyon.
Stone Canyon.
Willow Valley, Arizona. Charles Barkley and Phil Mickelson versus Peyton Manning and Steph Curry. Who won, Greg?
We learned a lot this week. This was Mickelson and Barkley.
This is the largest bet I've ever made on a golf match. They were the dog.
That was smart. Mickelson, that was quite wise.
Barkley were the dog. The pro on the was a dog to the other two. Yeah. Largest bet I've ever made. And then the most recent, Kyle. This is the one that you were trying to get to.
Yeah, this was Bryson and Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And Phil and Brady again.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. And it was in Montana at Moonlight Basin.
Correct. Yes.
And I think Rodgers and Bryson won.
They did. Yeah. Rodgers was like the MVP, I think.
Brady might stink. Yeah, Brady might stink.
I was like, there's no way he's going to be as bad as the last time we saw him. He was way
That's
worse.
That's kind of what I thought, too.
He was way worse.
He's not a great golfer.
Well, Bryson DeChambeau puts his undefeated record on the line this week on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, to take on Brooks Koepka in a heavyweight bout of not 12 rounds, Greg, just 12 holes. We're not doing the whole 18 thing anymore. We are now down to 12 holes. This will be played at the Wynn Golf Club, which I'm very familiar with, and it should be exciting.
Yeah. The 12 holes thing's fascinating. And I think it makes it really hard to pick a winner. And I think it takes a lot of the data that we have and the numbers that we have and would normally use and throws them out in a way. But we've seen Brooks play twice and miss two cuts. We've seen Bryson play in a long drive and the Ryder Cup and nothing else.
Yes. And do you know the last official event that Bryson played, Greg?
Tour championship,
yeah.
Right?
But it feels like we see him constantly because of Ryder Cup, because of long drive, because of YouTube and Twitter. It feels like we see him constantly. He has not played an official event in like 2.5 months.
Right. So you don't know. Recent form is out in a way. Course history is out completely because we've never seen it. And so you're basing this off of what skill set? And of course, we do have a good idea of Tom Fazio design. So we know what his course is asked for. And I think they benefit both players, actually. So that's difficult to tell. But the hardest thing is you got 12 holes. And if we had all the data, if we had our full data lake out and everything was relevant and recent,
I love Greg referencing the data lake. That's the best.
Shows the best.
Yeah, had to get it in there. You have full access to it. You're still dealing with 12 holes, not 18 holes, not four rounds, 12 holes. So I find it very difficult to handicap. It's almost a guess.
Well, they were doing this dumb, like, 12-round, heavyweight fight thing, which is just whatever. But I agree with what you're saying, Greg. It is hard to figure out, but I am pro the normalization of, like, 9-hole rounds and 12-hole rounds and stuff like that. I think it's good for golf. I think it is. It's great for us because we don't have to spend 5 hours on this thing. You know, you can do it in 3 hours and get out. And it's just, I don't know. It makes it to me, I know this isn't the reason that they did it, but I think it makes it a little bit more appealing.
I agree with you. It might, if somebody gets hot, we, this thing might be over in nine holes. Who knows what happens? Might be over pretty quickly. And Greg, I'll give you a couple of nuggets. Let's talk about the course a little bit. So Wynn Golf Club, one of the few, maybe two courses that I would say is actually on the strip, like literally on the strip. But when you're there, it doesn't feel like it. It's kind of weird and secluded. Not enough room for a driving range. So unless they give these guys just a hole to hit bombs on, they'll be warming up in a, just like a little bit of a,
but they're going to have six net holes they can warm up on.
That's yeah, true. So that's Fazio redesigned this. So he designed it originally, then redesigned it in 19. And now it is six. There's six par threes out there. Six par threes, four fives, and eight fours. And it is, as you can imagine, beautiful and splendid. And I love everything about it.
Yeah, it sounds like they added in a ton of land. Created, or at least dug some up. They created
a lot,
elevation
yeah,
change. Yeah. You think it's going to be pretty flat out there, right on the strip, and it's not. It's got some real movement to the property, which is interesting. There's some water, and I think there's water on 12 of the 18 holes. I don't know which.
Yeah, there's like a creek that runs throughout the whole course. It'll go up alongside of some of the fairways by some of the tees. So like you can find that creek or whatever they want to call it. You can find it a lot.
Which I have always thought is a cool design feature. And then what we know about Fazio. Fazio is a guy who likes to bunker landing areas off the tee. And he likes to utilize bunkers and trees to pinch some of those landing areas to make the wide fairways play a little shorter at times. Now, the advantage that has given guys, you think back to Caves Valley, think back to the Summit Club, it gives advantage to guys who can carry the ball a long way off the tee because all of a sudden those pinch down landing areas are no longer their landing areas. They are but now we're dealing with just two players. This course is a little shorter than Summit and Caves Valley. And they're both long hitters. So I don't know if there's going to be a real clear advantage for one of them, but you can see these pictures here. They're pretty, pretty neat.
Yeah. So Jacob, if you're watching on YouTube, is showing, I actually took and tweeted out these pictures from when I played from the Wynn. It does not feel like you were on the strip at all. Jacob, if you could go to the one with the waterfall, that's the first one, I think, here. KP, this is the man-made waterfall they put in behind 18, and they give you, so if you're playing a regular round there, depending on what tee you're playing, if you make an ace, they just give you cold hard cash. So I think the front tees are, I want to say like 15,000 if you make an ace, the middle tees are 20 grand, and the back tees are 25 grand if you make an ace here. Now, here's the problem, Kyle. This is number 18, and 17 is a really good match play hole as well. If you're in charge of this, you cannot run the risk of not playing the signature holes, right? You can't let these be the final holes of the day. You got to get these up here in like the first couple holes that we play in case somebody runs away with this thing.
So are they going to play them like, are they going to route it to start at like 12 or something?
I actually created a routing that I thought would be good. I was going to start them at, I had them playing 16, 17, 18, and then kind of looping back. So you'd get to this whole third. I just don't think you can run a risk of losing this. And while people are tuned in early, they get to play the signature hole.
Do they have like, I need more on the handing out cash. They have like a pit boss standing out there, like in the bunker, like just distributing chips as you make your ace.
Yeah, maybe they give it to you in chips and I hope you don't get it out of the casino. So the thing is, you have to take a caddy is assigned to you. So you're out there with a caddy. So he makes sure that you tee it up behind the tee markers and it's all monitored with cameras. So like you can't really lie about it or anything. So if you make it, they pay it out.
It's incredible. Did you come close?
Dude, I stuffed it to like 5 feet.
Wow.
I missed the putt.
What was the throw like?
It was a 7-iron, and it was all over the flag the entire time. And I was like,
"What were you thinking it when it was in the air?"
First of all, I've never made an ace, so I'm like, if there was ever a time for this to go in, like just do it, baby, let's go.
Which monetary tee were you on?
Whatever the middle was, I think it was 20 grand.
Okay.
Yeah, which would have been. I would not have left it. They could have given it to me in chips. They would have gotten it right back.
It's my lucky day. I'll put 20 grand on red.
Let's try to double this before I get out of here.
It's a life hedge. You even if you spend your 20K in chips, you still made a one that day. So you exactly. walk away ahead.
Exactly. All right, let's make a pick here. Greg, you want to go first?
Bryson.
Thank you.
You want me to elaborate?
Sure. Yeah. Wow. At least a little bit. So I believe Caesars has Bryson at -125 and Brooks at even money. If other sports books existed, which they don't, you could probably shop this and get them close to even money. But Caesars has it at -125 for Bryson.
Yeah, which I think is worth it. The one fear that I have is I don't really worry too much about the needling and the trash talking and getting really under anyone's skin. I think they both know what they're doing here and they are expecting it and anticipating it. And I don't think it's really going to get under anybody's skin. But I do think Bryson has a little bit of a distance advantage. He's not playing with brand new equipment, not playing with a brand new ball, brand new driver. Assuming Koepka is going to put that stuff in play this week. And I think he's quite frankly the better player. I think Brooks has been struggling with his game a little bit and I haven't seen any signs that it's back in form. So I'm going to go with, and I also know, we know how hard Bryson's been working. We don't know exactly other than what Brooks has said. We don't know how hard he's working. So I think all the logic points to Bryson here.
They're going to mic up. Like, how many words is mic'd up Brooks going to say over 12 holes?
It's going to be dumb. They're not going to say anything.
That's why Phil's there.
Totally.
Like, that's the hope. All right. Phil and Barkley take this over.
Remember the first Tiger Phil one? They didn't, I mean, they talked like for two holes.
Yeah.
And that was it. And it just, I don't know. I think the idea of it is better than the reality.
Yeah, but they fixed that with getting in four guys, getting Phil and Peyton. Peyton's great at that stuff. And this one would be really terrible if in terms of chatter, if Phil and Barkley weren't there. And now their only jobs are to host it. They're not even playing. So I think it's not like you'll have 6 minutes of dead silence because Brooks and Bryson aren't talking to each other.
But I don't think you want to hear Brooks and Bryson talking a lot. Like me, when I think of, and this is part of the problem with the first one, I don't want to see Tiger play and be someone other than Tiger. I don't want to see Tiger become
Phil.
I don't want to see Tiger try to be Phil. I want to see Tiger be Tiger. And I want to see Brooks compete the way Brooks competes, which he's not talking. If Jordan Spieth's in there, I want a lot of mic on him, right? I want to hear him talking.
Just let him go.
Yeah, let him go. But I don't want to see that forced with Brooks or Tiger or a player like that.
This reminds me of the Matthew Wolf DJ thing where it's like it was just you have to have the right person there, right? It just didn't work, you know?
It can't be forced.
And it's fine if it doesn't work. But I do think, like, to their credit, you do have to have Phil there or the equivalent of, which I guess Barkley is like the equivalent of Phil in a different sport.
KP, make a pick.
Bryson. I think he'll be, yeah, we're not really elaborating here. I think that he will be benefited by, I think Bryson gets, like, starts to unwind based on two things. One, like proper courses, like an open championship course. He just struggles a lot. And then two, we saw him really kind of melt down at some events this year where there's a ton of fans. As far as I know, there's not going to be a ton of fans at this.
Like nobody there.
And I think that really, that plays to his advantage in a huge way because, you know, we saw him melt down at US Open, at St. Jude, when everybody's hollering Brooksy at him. That's not real. I mean, actual Brooksy will be there, but that's not going to, like, that issue is not going to be an issue at this event.
I'll make it a clean sweep for Bryson DeChambeau. To his detriment, sometimes Bryson cares too much. And the thing that we talk about Brooks all the time is motivation. And it seems like he only plays good golf when he's significantly motivated. I'm not sure this is the type of event that motivates Brooks Koepka, and Bryson will be at 100 like he always is. And I just think he wins. I just think he cares more. I think he cares more.
Yeah.
Okay. How about this? We'll close on this, then we'll go to our mailbag. The match six, Greg, they call you and they say, you pick them, golfers, athletes, celebrities, however many you want. Who's on your short list for the match six?
Jordan.
Michael?
No.
Or Spieth.
Spieth. Oh. I don't know.
Both would be amazing, by the way.
I'm okay with the Peyton Mannings of the world. But I don't find it nearly as compelling. So I like getting a Spieth in there, and I would like to see them, he and Thomas, play as a pair against
Patrick Reed.
I wouldn't mind seeing Patrick in there. But I mean, wouldn't a guy like Hatton just be phenomenal in there?
Yeah.
You get Tyrrell Hatton and Rory.
He'd be the guy that wouldn't sell tickets, but like when people were watching it, they'd be like, oh my God, this is
right. Great. You have Spieth and Thomas selling tickets, and then they come and entertain. I wouldn't mind seeing, I mean, they're too good of friends, but I think you want to have the conversation of Spieth and Greller out there. And if you have JT as a partner, he's another guy that's going to sell tickets and be fun to watch. And the other side, I wouldn't mind seeing a European duo. And I think you got some fire over there with like a Sergio, a Rahm, a Hatton, somebody like that. I might get into the mix to get a little, make this thing emotional. And I think you could have a serious vibe too, a real golf vibe, which I enjoy. And you could make it really fun at the same time.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised they didn't go that route, like the heavy competitive golf route. Like when it was first Tiger and Phil, I thought match two was going to be like Tiger and Phil would headline, but with all this extra time that we have, here's Jordan versus Justin Thomas here. Like you'd have like two undercards. They never went that route. They went more of the like broader
celebrity route.
Sport. Yeah. So KP, yeah. Which is there a market for like hardcore golf matches, or is this more like we got to get Patrick Mahomes involved? We've got to get Chris Paul involved. We've got to get these other guys involved.
I think it's the latter. I don't know. I think you could probably do both. I mean, I have a hard time with this because we're all going to watch, like we all watch for our job. So I'm like, I have a hard time figuring out, would I tune in if this wasn't my job? And I don't know that I would either way, like no matter who it was. But I think I like the idea of guys. I just read a profile of Mahomes from earlier this year by Dylan Deshay from golf.com. And he was talking about how Mahomes is like obsessed with golf, like legit, like goes to Bandon, like deep in it. And so I think when you get guys like that are from other sports, but that are kind of like obsessive about it, I think that's pretty interesting. Like a Steph, that's fun to me. And so I would actually, you mentioned Mahomes, that's actually who I was thinking. I was thinking Spieth, Mahomes, somebody like a Bryce Harper. I don't know if he's deep into it.
That'd be fun if he is.
And then like, JT's a good talker. He was really good on the, he was a broadcaster on the Phil Tiger or the Peyton Manning, Brady, Phil Tiger one.
Yeah. The match two. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. When he was hollering at Barkley about not being able to dunk because he was too heavy. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
There was a lot of good ones. He was really good at that. Yeah.
He was great. I think he would be, you know, there's a lot of guys that you hear their name, you're like, oh, he'd be awesome. But it's like, I don't think Colin Morikawa would be good in that situation, right? Just because he's great at golf, but he's not going to be great in that format. But I think somebody like JT could be. So I'll say those four: JT, and Mahomes against the Under Armour duo of Spieth and Bryce Harper.
There you go. Now we're talking. Now we're talking. All right. We've got to get to our mailbag. These are questions submitted by you, the viewers, you, the listeners, that we will now do our best to answer. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any US orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
And we're back. Okay. We got some pretty good questions here. It was a quick little turnaround for the mailbag. I'll try to ease us into these because there's a couple that are probably going to take longer than others here. Let's ease our way into this. How about, Kyle, what are your top, quote, golf is a normal sport moments of the year? And actually, nice. while you're going through some of these off the top of your head, I'm just going to go to Twitter, do a little advanced search at Kyle Porter and type in normal sport and see what pops up.
Well, so you're not easing your way in because I have an announcement to make here.
Oh, no. Don't tell me you're ending the bit.
Oh, no. No. Okay. The bit continues. So my announcement is that I actually wrote a book about the 2021 golf season. You guys know about this, but viewers and listeners do not. And it is entitled Normal Sport.
Yes. Oh, you wow. More into the bit.
Oh, yeah. This is my quarter. I'm all in. So
it is not ending.
I've got about, I'm about 85, 90% done. And I actually have, I hired an illustrator to make some illustrations. So I think producer Jacob actually has one of those illustrations.
Oh my gosh, look at this reveal. If you are watching on YouTube, look at this. That is the infamous bow. That is the Masters after Hideki's victory as caddy. I forget his name, as given the bow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's one of many illustrations from the book. So I'm very excited about this. The plan is for it to come out in about 2 weeks' time. You remember how Brooks dragged that 2019 PGA win across the finish line at Bethpage? That's how I feel with this book right now. I'm just dragging it across the finish line. So all that to say, buy the book when it comes out, and you'll see my top normal sport the top normal sport moments of the year.
Well, first off, congratulations. We're very excited. Cannot wait to get our eyes on that. Should we just skip this one? Like, I don't want to give up any of like the goods here.
So there's so many. I'll give you the one that really stood out to me that I completely forgot about.
Okay.
And it happened at Kapalua. Went all the way back. So I basically went back to the beginning of the year and just kind of rolled through every event. I picked out the most ridiculous, but also like meaningful things that happened. So there's some, it's very like funny in parts, but also like, hey, here's some memorable, like, obviously like Rory crying at the Ryder Cup. Like I write a lot about that, but the one that stood out the most, the reason that it made me laugh, because I completely forgot about it. At Kapalua, Bryson had a human being on the practice green with an umbrella, but he wasn't protecting him from the rain. He was running. This person, it wasn't Tim Tucker, his caddy, whoever it was running with his ball to protect it from the wind so that he could get a read on how the putts were rolling without the wind. So you had a human with an umbrella turned sideways running against the wind with this little golf ball that's trickling across the ground. It's preposterous. Like, this is the weirdest sport in the world.
So
it's stuff like that I kind of highlighted in the book.
So normal it is sport. So funny you say that, because that that was on like Golf Channel or whatever, and I recorded that and tweeted it out, and that still get like someone retweets that every day, and every day like I'm reminded of like how stupid
here
it is.
Here it is.
Jacob, good job. If you're watching on YouTube, Jacob is going to play. We're trying to play the clip, but that guy right there with that Cobra umbrella runs alongside of this golf ball. It's absolutely absurd. And there's like a launch monitor there, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's just the dumbest sport in the world. And so it was just, you know, you had guys standing on the side of the green at the Olympics in a 7-man playoff for a bronze medal, like it was the Sonny Hanna amateur. Like little stand bags, like watching guys finish up. They're playing for a bronze medal.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. That's so good.
So all right. I tried to pull those out of the year.
All right. Well, cannot wait to see normal sport. We'll obviously be talking more about that here in the near future. Greg, let me bring you in on this one, because Kyle and I talked a little bit about this. Rory not infamously, someone in the chat, I guess it should be famously, ripped his shirt just a couple of days ago. Kyle and I on Sunday's recap were like, well, we've seen like Sergio go nuts on like a sand bunker. We've seen people helicopter their clubs or whatever, but you have the advantage of playing much more competitive golf than we have, which I feel like elicits a lot more emotion. Is there something unhinged that you have seen on the golf course that has stuck with you over the years?
Or done. Personally in my life? Done.
Either.
In person. No, I'm not a big club thrower.
Have you seen anybody go crazy?
I've seen club throws. I don't even think I've seen a broken club in person.
Wow.
But the best unhinged moment, at least from this year, was Tyrrell Hatton stomping his, what was that, a wedge? I think it was a wedge. He stomped
at,
it
at the
four
open?
Or five times. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was I mean, that was the most unhinged moment I've seen this year. In my competitive golf, I really haven't seen people go berserk like that, which is why the Sergio thing and the Rory thing we didn't get to see, right? It was behind the scenes. We just saw the result.
I wish we
would
have.
But the Sergio thing is so unbelievable, because most people haven't actually seen someone throw a tantrum like that, right?
How about,
it really doesn't happen very often.
Are you in a rocking chair, by the way?
Yes.
He had to move. So
I had
here's
to move,
a little look
right?
behind
this is
the
not
curtains.
My normal spot.
Yeah,
right.
The Wi-Fi was not great in the room that he was in, and he very graciously moved to a different area so that he could plug hardwire in. So we're getting a different perspective of Greg now.
Yeah.
Podcast improvs.
Yeah.
So I got the Hatton thing happened about, and I remember all this because I've just gone through the whole season in about a month. The Hatton thing happened about 30 minutes after he flipped off it looked like he was, I'm still not totally sure, but it looked like he was flipping off like the entire crowd. I think it was probably just like one person that had made a noise or something. And then there was a moment at the Masters. I don't know if you guys remember this. It was Billy Horschel on, I think it was Saturday. He screamed, he flipped off and screamed F you at the pin on 16, like at the flag. It was like, I think sometimes you, in the moment, you're like, well, that was weird. And then you get outside and you're like, that was crazy. Like, I can't believe that happened.
By the way, in trivia this year, Rick, no 2021 trivia.
Kyle, he's done his research.
He's done way too much research.
Yeah, we'll have to go back a little bit further. We'll have to schedule that trivia day. You guys like the Stump the Schwab style, going back and forth, right? I think that's a good.
Oh, so
fun. All right. Okay. There's one I really like here, but I'm going to get to it next. This one's pretty interesting too. Elijah, welcome to the show. How many times does someone have to win per year to be considered dominant? And I feel like this has changed over the years.
This is really interesting. Yeah, I would ask you guys this. Do you think John Rahm this year, 2021, was dominant?
2021 was a weird year.
Very strange. Because you could make the argument that he was. But he won once. How is that dominant? So, he complicates things, but I would say a real dominant year, a real memorable year is probably, I would probably set it at 5 wins. I think when you get 5 wins, like JT did in 2017, it's definite clear cut player of the year. Even at 4 wins with Patrick Cantlay, there was a big debate whether or not he was player of the year. And you get to 5 wins, there's not going to be a debate. So I think that's why I would draw the line there.
My number was a lot lower, but when you start to look through this, I think Greg is closer to right than I, like, dominant is like, okay, clear cut player of the year. I like that, using that as an example. Do you know how many 5 win seasons there's been dating back to 2000?
Is this a trivia question?
Let's start right now. Yeah.
I'll say 5 win seasons dating back to 2000. I'll say like 15, and Tiger's got 9 of them.
Okay. Greg, do you want to make a guess?
I don't think it's that many. I think it's more like 12, and Tiger's got 9 of them.
Hold on 1 second.
I know VJ had one, JT had one, Spieth had one.
Yep.
Okay, so my quick count, I think there's 12 of them, and I think Tiger has 8 of them. So, okay. So JT and Spieth, we know those ones. Jason Day's 2015.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Remember that? Yeah. Okay, so those 3, and then there is one more non-Tiger.
Vijay had 9 wins in a year.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Vijay in 2004. So Tiger did it in 2000. Oh, you know what? This is kind of flawed because I'm looking at the list for most wins in a season. So if Vijay had 9 and Tiger had 8, I did not count that. So there's probably more. But Tiger led the years, or these were the leaders. Tiger did 9 in 2000, 5 in 2001, 2002, 2003, VJ's for 2004, 2005, 6, 7 for Tiger. He had 5 wins in each of those. 2009, and then that was the last before Spieth did it. Oh, Spieth and Day 13. Did it. In
what about 13? Didn't Tiger do it in 13?
Or was he had 3.
Oh, he had 4. 3. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so now that we've gone through that list, like, does so dominant.
Wow. Yeah, it's hard because I don't value wins as highly as most people. I thought John Rahm was dominant this year. I went back and looked at basically from the PGA Championship until the end of the PGA Tour season. I mean, he didn't really lose to very many guys. Now, he didn't win very many of those tournaments, but he finished like 3rd in all of them, essentially. And I think it depends on what your definition of dominant is. And I think that that might not be the term that I would use for what Rom did, perhaps. Like, I think what Greg's getting at is probably right, that it's like you don't stumble into five wins. You might stumble into, I mean, Jason Kokrak almost stumbled into three. I wouldn't call him a dominant right. player for the year. So all that to say, like, I think what Rom did in 2021 needs a word different than dominant. And I think I'm with Greg that if you win five, you were dominant that year.
What word would you use to describe John Rahm's 2021?
Underrated, spectacular. They're just, okay. You know, even in doing my research for this book, like, I loved what the Olympics did in awarding something for second and third place, because I don't feel like we value we shouldn't value them the way we value a win, but we should value them more than what we do right now. Like, I think beating 154 guys in a week at the PGA Championship, that should be meaningful. Like, there should be like something to that, and we don't ascribe any value to it at all right now. I mean, we do, but like, the sport as a whole does not.
Yeah, I think some of the majors will give like a trophy to like second. I think the Masters does it. Also, Mayakoba did it, I think. I think Mayakoba gave a second place trophy to Carlos Ortiz, because there's a photo of him holding a smaller chameleon.
It's like a little lizard
next to Victor. And it's like, oh, this is like a cute photo.
They have an egg for third place.
Yeah, it's like egg. Maybe next year. There's a good question from Gimme Bets, which says, which golfer should we buy now for the majors? We're going to hold that, because that's a future episode. We've done that each December, so we'll do that again here shortly. But here's one that I think is very, very interesting. It's from Lewis Morgan, or maybe Louis Morgan, hard to say. In 100 years' time, will we still regard Tiger as the GOAT? Think about this. 100 years is a long time. Who was the GOAT 100 years ago?
Old Tom?
1921.
Bobby Jones?
Young Tom?
Yeah, what was Bobby Jones's era? Would that have been?
I don't think he started winning until like 22 or 23.
You might be right.
Was it Vardon back then?
Yeah. So his first, so Bobby Jones' first major win was 1923.
Yeah, okay.
So he's out.
He's looking at
for exactly 100 years ago.
Hagen? Walter Hagen?
Vardon would have been good because so 49 wins, and he won the Open Championship amongst other events in 1914. So that was like the end of his run, would have been like right at like if we went back to November 22nd, 1921, we would have been 7 years removed from Vardon's like end of his career. That might be a good one.
Reading about it in the paper.
So we would have been, yeah.
There's no podcast about it.
Months later, yeah.
I would say in 100 years, somebody. It's so hard. I got to say, yeah, Tiger will still be the GOAT.
Okay.
That's a great question.
Yes, I love this. I will hold my opinion for 1 second because, okay, so think about this. It's so interesting because not all sports have a guy that completely like upended the era, changed the game, changed the economics, changed everything. Not all sports necessarily have that, but golf does with Tiger. So for there to be a new GOAT in 100 years, there would seemingly have to be another inflection point, another moment, another single-handedly sport-changing person.
So I've got a couple different thoughts on this. One, if you would ask somebody this question in like 2000, they wouldn't have said there would be another Michael Jordan.
Correct.
Right? And just 15 years later, or not, I mean, 10 years later, 5 years later, there was. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just, it's very like, I don't know. But I
there think usually the other, is.
Yeah. And it seems hard to fathom right now. Like, it's like we can't even imagine that happening. But I think the other thing is this coincides with one of my hotter Tiger takes, which I feel like we a little bit overrate what he did, because the fields against which he played were not there. I mean, they just flat out weren't as good in 2000 as they are in 2021. Right. So we also underrate him because he completely, like, he created those fields in 2021, yeah, which is insane. Yeah. Like, that's an insane thing for one person to do, that Justin Thomas and Rory are playing golf because of Tiger in a lot of ways. So he has to get credit for that. But I think that I think it'll be harder to do what he did into the future, because he was so much better. But I don't think the general public really sees the fields that he played against as different than the ones that are existing right now or will exist 20 years from now. So I think it'll be really hard for somebody to surpass him for that reason, if that makes sense.
Jacob,
talking about 83 wins.
Jacob has Harry Vardon's major championship wiki ready.
Sure.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of yellow boxes with your top 10. It's a lot of green squares.
That
which
Brooks
are,
Koepka?
Major, what is
major win?
Yeah. What is NYF? Not yet formed.
Formed. Not yet founded, I would guess.
Founded. I
mean, you also I've never seen that before.
I think you also have to keep in mind there's probably not even the same caliber of field back then, but not even the same number of people in the field.
Yeah.
Back and with Harry Vardon, right? I mean,
yeah,
there might have been 13 people in one of those open championships.
I mean, old Tom gets credit for a major over 7 people, because there was 8 right. people, I think, in the first open.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Harry Vardon only had so he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 major championships, but only 2 majors existed,
and he so only played in 32. And so he finished second. He finished second what, 5 times?
Yeah, that's about right. What's first that going to look like?
First or second from now? 12 okay. times out of 32.
So my general idea is that yes, there will be a new goat. Maybe 2 of them. Maybe 2 more goats, because the 100 years is such a long time. The rate of training and equipment and technology and athletes and all that stuff. The LeBron James example is a really good one. No one would have thought there would have been another Michael Jordan. It happened very, very quickly. When guys like LeBron, that athlete, find golf, we're going to have another moment. I just think there's too many years and too much time that someone else will be considered the GOAT.
And too much allure. The pool that you're pulling from now is so much bigger than it was when Tiger came into the game, right? Because there's so much more money involved. That's what's making it more competitive, which it broadens the pool, but it also makes it a lot harder for that person to separate himself, right?
So John in the chat is actually getting to this. He said, how in the world is anyone going to get to 80 plus wins if you need to get to 5 plus for several years as these fields are getting more and more difficult, which I also agree with. But at the same time, the way we know golf now might not be the way golf works in 100 years. What if golf or the PGA Tour or whatever does go to 50 players in these tournaments and they're all no cuts, or like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't even know what the shape of the game is, or it continues to go. Like, what if in 100 years there are 500 player fields, and because they figured out a technology that they can play rounds in 15 minutes and you can get everybody out there all day long. Like, you know what I mean? Like, are 83 wins going to look, I don't know. It's there's so much that could possibly happen.
Long ways away.
You also might have, it might be like the Cy Young thing where he wins 511 times or whatever the number is. And you just don't see guys playing that much because there's too much, they make so much money that they don't need to. So maybe wins aren't even like the
right
barometer for how you judge. Maybe it's just strokes gained.
Can I offer another theory? Like, what if equipment gets rolled back and that ends up separating someone who might actually have a little bit more skill than might have been coasting?
Now we're talking
equipment.
Yeah. Harry Vardon 2 coming out.
Yeah. It's not even going to be strokes gained. It's going to be like, how many orbits around the sun did your ball take before it came back? Right. Like, it's just, it's going to be, we're going to be playing golf on Mars by then. I don't know. It's going to be
certainly crazy. Not at Wingfoot.
Certainly not at Wingfoot. Okay. I'm trying to think if there's any other ones that are this. I don't know how we would do this, but this is kind of interesting. If every player were to play their worst for Masters Week, who would win? Which we always have the conversation of who at their best would win. This is who at their worst would win. So I guess
I have an answer to that.
Okay, so how are you the golfer with the highest floor, like the most consistent guy?
So Data Golf came out with this this thing called box plots, which shows who the best players are at when they have their I'm gonna butcher this. I think we talked about it one time, but it's basically like who's best is best and who's worst is best. So who has the highest floor, who has the highest ceiling. So somebody like Morikawa has a really high ceiling and a really low floor. Mm-hmm. And then somebody like, well, I could figure it out right here, but a different player might have a really high floor, but a really low ceiling. So they don't really vary that much. So if you rank by the fifth percentile of players' rounds, so which this is the like, bottom
end. That's like their worst rounds.
This is like their 95th best round of the last year, essentially, or the 95th percentile. So it's not exactly 100 rounds, but the 95th percentile of their rounds over the last year. Do you guys want to guess who the best guy out of that is?
Oh boy. Hold on. Let me pull up the official World Golf Rankings just so I can like look at a list.
So this
just
is
2021. I would guess Bryson.
This is last 12 months.
No, I think Bryson's worst is really, really bad. Abe Anser.
No. He's like 12th.
Okay. I'm circling the drain.
Somebody else that will be on the international team next year for the President's Cup.
Oh, okay.
Cam Smith?
No.
Hideki.
No.
Sungjae.
No. It's your boy, Rick.
Victor?
He's European.
He's
Corey Connors.
Oh, Corey Connors. Wow. Corey Connors? That makes complete sense. We talk about it all the time on Monday, Greg. We're like, he's got a million top 20s in a row. That's all this guy ever does.
Yep. So he is his fifth percentile round. So like his 95th best round is a negative 1.65 strokes gained.
Negative. Say that again. Negative. What is it?
1.65.
Wow, that's really good.
It's an unbelievable four. JT is second, which I didn't expect. Xander's third.
That should have been my guess. That would have been a good one.
Paul Casey, low ceiling, high four is fourth. John Rahm, Daniel Berger, Cantlay, Cameron Tringali in the top 10.
Wow.
Yeah, he just finished his second every week.
Lowest ceiling, highest floor. So if you flip it around and go 95th percentile, so this is like basically the best.
This is where you get the Brysons and the Morikawas, right. I feel like. Yeah.
So Cantlay is plus 7.6.
Joke.
Rahm plus 6.7. Sammy Burns.
Love that guy.
Plus 6.3. Morikawa. Emiliano Grillo.
Yeah, oh my God. He just offsets all those really good ones with really bad ones.
He's like a skyscraper.
Ustase and Corey Connors is on this list also.
Corey Connors is good.
No surprise that it's closed out with Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy.
Wow. There you go. I was not expecting such a scientific answer to said question, but it makes sense.
Corey Connors.
Corey Connors, Master congrats champ. on your green jacket.
Green.
You'll love to see it. All right, gentlemen, anything
real quick, you want to know who has the lowest standard deviation? So that basically that's like the most doesn't change.
Most consistent guy. And this is round over round.
Wouldn't that be Corey Connors?
It's not Corey Connors.
Is it someone that like we're like, is it like a top 25 player?
Yeah, it's a very obvious, you should get this.
I wanted to say Berger.
We already talked about him.
Xander.
Paul Casey.
Ah.
Give me Paul Casey. Zach Johnson is second. Jeez. Matthew Wolf is last. Matthew Wolf has the widest standard deviation.
I believe that. This one's for you, Kyle. This is from Russell in North Carolina. We'll go out on this note. He says, why is Memphis undoubtedly the worst stop on the PGA Tour?
Listen, I got to sell books now, and people in Memphis buy books also. So I refuse to address that
question. Love Memphis. Love Memphis.
Tony Allen, grit and grind. Love those guys.
Is that the Grind House? Is that in Memphis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony Allen's my guy.
Anything else before we get out of here, gentlemen?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving. Fun pod, and hope you guys have a good week.
Safe travels if you're traveling. Happy Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much. And we'll be back at it again on Friday for a Brooks and Bryson recap pod. We'll see how it all goes down. But for now, let me thank producer Jacob, does all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there, it's Greg Ducharme. You can find him on Twitter at TheRealGFD. And Kyle Porter, you can find at KylePorterCBS. You can find me at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.